Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Judges chapter 10. I intend to cover the entire chapter, verses 1 through 18. We will entitle this chapter, Tola and Jair, Judge Israel. Two minor judges, and not too much is said about, but they're all in this chapter, so it ought to be an easy chapter. Our context is this. In chapter 9, we saw the story of Abimelech, Gideon's rogue son, who killed all of his 68 brothers except for Jotham. Jotham gets up on Mount Gerizim at Shechem and curses Abimelech, and we see the result of that curse in chapter 9 as he, first of all, takes over Shechem and then destroys Shechem when there's a revolt in Shechem under Gaal. And then Abimelech goes up to the city of Thebez, and he's about, probably because they were in cahoots with the rebel Shechemites, and a lady pushed a millstone off the tower there and bopped him on the head, wounding him, and then he asked his bodyguard to kill him, and so much for him. So that's our context. We start now in chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. Now, after Abimelech died, Tola, the son of Puah, the son of Dodo, a man of Issachar, arose to save Israel, and he lived in Shamir in the hill country of Ephraim. He judged Israel 23 years, then he died and was buried in Shamir. Now this Tola was of the tribe of Issachar. Well, where is Issachar? If you look at the Jezreel Valley, the first tribe coming down from Carmel, going northwest to southeast, is Zebulun. Then you go to the little tiny tribe down there in the lower Kidron Valley, the lower Jezreel Valley, that's Issachar. It's right, the northern edge of Issachar bumps up against the point of Naphtali, which is right near the southern end of the Sea of Galilee. That's kind of where you're talking about, sort of a small tribe. The judges came from all kinds of tribes. We're going to see one from Manasseh. We're going to see him from Ephraim. We already know that Ehud was a Benjamite as he beat the fat king Eglon of Moab. We know that Samson was from the tribe of Dan. So the judges were from all over Israel. Now, we see Tola, the name Tola is the same name as the oldest son of Issachar, which we can go back to the story of the patriarchs in the Pentateuch and see that, but this can't be the same Tola because we're a long way past the patriarchs now. I love these names. Puah is dad and Dodo. How'd you like to have a dad named Puah and a granddad named Dodo? Puah is the same name as the second son of Issachar, which is listed in 1 Chronicles 7:1. But again, the family names, they use the same names as time goes on, so that doesn't tie them back to a very much earlier time, back in the 1400s B.C. or so, because now we're bumping up between 1350 and 1050, so we're a little, some people say put it back that far, but I don't think so. They say it's the same Tola, the same Puah, but it doesn't make any difference. Some actually say that this Puah was the uncle of Abimelech on Abimelech's father's side, which would make him the brother of Gideon. This is James Fawcett Brown said that, but Clark disagrees because Gideon was from Manasseh, Puah was from Issachar. But anyway, that's the very little information we have on Tola's dad, Puah, who was the son of Dodo. I love that name, Dodo. Gosh, I can think of some presidents, current presidents, that name would fit perfectly, much better. Even better than Brandon, even, maybe. But anyway, we go now to look. We need to look at Shamir. Where is that? Well, Thebez, where Abimelech got killed by the woman who pushed the millstone on his head. That is halfway up the road from Shechem, going northeast to Beth Shan in the bottom of Jezreel Valley. Shechem is right west of Succoth, where the Jabbok River runs into the Jordan Valley going from the east. To give you a feel for it, maybe 5 miles or so up that road in the hill country of Ephraim. Well, if you go basically about 7 or 8 miles, I guess, I'm looking at the map here, you end up in the Shamir, except it's got a question mark with BibleAtlas.org. So we don't know exactly where Tola was from. His town has been lost, but it's Mount Shamir. There was another Mount Shamir in Judah listed in Joshua 15, which is different. This is Shamir in Ephraim. Shamir means a sharp thorn. Great place. This guy, Tola, his hometown was called a sharp thorn, and he had a granddad named Dodo. Well, at least that sort of identifies him. He arose to save Israel. He judged Israel 23 years. It doesn't say who he beat, what the problem was, but he didn't try to be a king, 23 years of judging, but he didn't try to be a king. Abimelech did that. We saw what happened to him. John Gill says, Tola faithfully discharged his duty And how do we know that? Well, because there's no mention of foreign invaders. Adam Clark says, quote, "It is likely that the land had rest and that the enemies of the Israelites had made no hostile incursions into the land during his presidency." Or during his judgeship would be a better word, I think. Mr. Clark, the KJV, instead of save, verse 1, Tola saved Israel. KJV has delivered Israel. Excuse me, the KJV has defended Israel, which makes it sound like nobody ever even got into the country. So that was 23 years of blessed peace. We go now to Judges 10, verses 3 through 5. After him, after Tola, Jair the Gileadite arose and judged Israel 22 years. Another period of peace. He had 30 sons who rode on 30 donkeys, and they had 30 cities in the land of Gilead that are called Havoth Jair to this day. And Jair died and was buried in Canaan. Now, Jair is called a Gileadite here. Of course, Gilead is the area to the east of the Jordan River between the southern end of the Sea of Galilee and the northern tip of the Dead Sea. That long area over there is very amorphous. But anyway, you hear Gilead thing east of the Jordan River. And we know that Jair, more particularly, was of the tribe of Manasseh. There were two tribes over there. The southernmost was Reuben, the middle one was Gad, and the northern one, east of the Sea of Galilee and Bashan, was Manasseh. And Jair was of the tribe of Manasseh. He was the first of the judges on the east side of the Jordan. Some commentators say that God wanted to show that no tribe should have supremacy, so we're going to have judges from all over the places, which I earlier said. God wanted to show that the tribes on the east side of the Jordan were just as important as the tribes on the west side. And, of course, the main enemy that Jair is probably going to have to face is the Ammonites, because they're in Gilead. They're on the east side of the Jordan River in between, Bashan to the north and Moab to the south. Ammon's right there in the middle of Gilead, going east of the Jordan River between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. And so that's probably who Jair is fighting. Now, he had 30 sons who rode on 30 donkeys. You would think, well, that's sort of low class. No, it was considered very honorable back then to ride on a donkey. Remember, Israel didn't have horses. And the fact that Jair had 30 sons shows that Jair was prosperous, which shows that Israel was prosperous. Now, nothing's written about Jair, but, you know, it's real nice to be a historical figure about which nothing is written, is it not? I remember that old Yiddish proverb, "May God deliver us from interesting historical times." These 30 sons of Jair probably rode circuit, probably just like a modern-day circuit rider would preach, or circuit judges would go around and handle law cases. That's probably what Jair's sons were doing, riding circuit to administer justice. Now, these 30 cities in the land of Gilead are called Havoth Jair to this day, to the day that the book was written, somewhere around the time of Samuel, about 1050 B.C. This is rough. Nobody knows for sure who wrote the book. But these 30 cities, Havoth Jair, are called Hamlets of the Enlightener. That's how they're translated into English. Hamlets of the Enlightener, kind of interesting. As Easton says, it's a district in the east of Jordan. Easton said that in Deuteronomy 3, we see that Jair took all the tract of Argob. So it's mentioned, and that tract was called Bashan Havoth Jair, which is, sounds like the enlightened cities of Jair in Bashan. But anyway, the NIV footnote has the settlements of Jair. Havoth Jair is translated as the settlements of Jair. Now, there was some more. There was another settlement. There was another group of cities called Havoth Jair in Moses' time. Jagiel says this: "There were some of this name that belonged to Jair, a son of Manasseh, in the times of Moses." Numbers 32, verse 41. These may be the same, at least some of them, for they were but 23 that Moses had, whereas these were 30. And these coming by inheritance to this Jair, a descendant of the former Jair, and he being of the same name, and these cities perhaps repaired and enlarged by him, the name of them was continued and established. For it is not reasonable to suppose, as some have done, that this is the same Jair that lived in the time of Moses, who, if so, must have lived more than 300 years, and aged men did not live to in those times, roughly from 1400 to 1100 or 1350 to 1050, that's about 300 years there between the time of Moses and the time of the judges. No, that's not the same person. I think Gil is right. Jair is separate. But they did have cities named Havoth Jair, and they probably just added seven more cities and called it by the same name, same Jair. Same name, but different Jair. This judge, Jair, dies in Kamon, a city in Gilead. If we look at the BibleAtlas.org map, found the Sea of Galilee, drop down a couple, 2, 3, 4 miles, and just to the east of the Jordan River, there's Kamon, where he died. We go now to Judges 10, verses 6 through 8. Then the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, served the Baals and the Ashtaroth, the gods of Aram, that's Syria, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of the sons of Ammon, and the gods of the Philistines. Thus they forsook the Lord and did not serve him. Now we've got over 40 years of peace, and then they got to get into worship of idols. Verse 7, the anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hands of the sons of Ammon. They afflicted and crushed the sons of Israel that year. For 18 years they afflicted all the sons of Israel who were beyond the Jordan in Gilead in the land of the Amorites. The land of the Amorites, that's who used to control that land over there. Remember Sihon, Og of Bashan and Sihon of Heshbon? Those were Amorite kings who had taken over from the earlier Ammonites and Moabites who controlled the area. Moabites to the south and Ammonites in the middle region there and up north into the area of Bashan, east of the Sea of Galilee. So anyway, now it's interesting to me that we're talking about the oppression of the tribes east of the Jordan, and yet the Philistines are in on this. They're on the southwest side of Israel, a long way away, but apparently they got in on all the fun. Let's look at all these gods, the Baals and the Ashtaroth. That's Ashtaroth is a plural form of Astarte. They were on the coast of the Mediterranean as their strong point where they started in Phoenicia, current-day Lebanon, the gods of Aram, Syria, which is northeast of Israel, the gods of Sidon, that's back on the Mediterranean coast there, going north from Acre, from Carmel to Acre to Tyre and then to Sidon. The gods of Moab, they are the ones to the east of the Dead Sea, from the northern tip of the Dead Sea all the way down to the southern tip of the Dead Sea, the brook Zered there. That's Moab. The gods of the son of Ammon, that's roughly from the top of the northern tip of the Dead Sea all the way up to the Jabbok River, which runs into the Jordan River about halfway south between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. And then the gods of the Philistines who were on the southwestern side of Israel. Now, who were these gods? Well, I don't worry about this too much. I just worry about Baals and Astarte because they're everywhere. But let's briefly talk about some of these gods. The gods of Aram, the Syria of Syria, that's Belus, Saturn, Astarte, Dea Syria. That's John Gill says this. He didn't mention Sin, the moon goddess Sin in Haran. I would have thought that would be one of them too, maybe. At least later during the time. I think Nebuchadnezzar's mother, I think it was, went up from Babylon up to Haran so she could worship her favorite moon god up there, Sin. And the gods of Sidon, that of course would be the Astarte, the Ashtaroth. The gods of Moab, Baal Peor and Chemosh. Baal Peor is the famous one that seduced the Israelites at the tail end of the Exodus. Gods of the sons of Ammon, that's Molech, that's the famous god that liked to have children, live human beings, offered up to him as sacrifice. Then the gods of the Philistines, there's Dagon in the city of Ashdod on the coast, Beelzebub at Ekron, which is a little bit in from the coast. Marnas is the Gaza on the southwest extremity of Israel on the coast. And Dersito, that was Ashkelon in between Ashdod and Gaza on the coast, Dersito. Now, of those gods, the famous one, of course, is Dagon, the fish god. We'll encounter him a little later on in our journey through the Old Testament. And, of course, the famous Beelzebub, the Lord of the Flies at Ekron. Now, I said something earlier about the Philistines afflicting the Israelites on the east. That might be too much of a stretch, too much of a speculation. It could be. We read in verse 7, the anger of the Lord burned against Israel. That would be all of them. He sold them into the hands of the Philistines. That would be the western side. Into the hands of the sons of Ammon. That would be on the eastern side of the Jordan. That's probably more likely. They afflicted and crushed the sons of Israel that year. What year? Well, it could be the year that Jair died. A natural reading of this if you like to take these judges chronologically, which some people do. Or it just could refer to the first year that Israel's enemies had brought them into bondage. A more imprecise reference. But at any rate, things are not good. We go now to Judges 10, verses 9 through 11. The sons of Ammon crossed the Jordan to fight also against Judah, Benjamin, and the house of Ephraim. So now not only are the eastern tribes in a pickle, but now the Western tribes are too. And if you look at Ammon crossing the Jordan, probably right there at the ford where the Jabbok River runs in, there was a ford around there called Beth Araba, a wide ford. And that's right due east of Ephraim. You go a little bit south, you get to Benjamin. A little bit south of that is Judah. So that's where the sons of Ammon were oppressing, so that Israel was greatly distressed. Verse 10, then the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord, saying, we have sinned against you, for indeed we have forsaken our God and served the Baals. And Baals there seems to be a general term for all these gods that I just mentioned. The Lord said to the sons of Israel, did I not deliver you from the Egyptians, the Amorites, the sons of Ammon, and the Philistines? Now these Ammonites, by crossing over to the west, that shows that they were not content to ravage the east side of the Jordan. They had to have more. This probably happened after they'd spent 18 years of oppressing the Transjordan east of the Jordan Israelites. And they figured, well, we squeezed them, let's go squeeze some Israelites on the west. And when this happened, the sons of Israel said, we sinned against you, Lord. Funny how repentance so often seems to come after bad stuff happens. The bad stuff being caused by one's sin. Great application point for modern day sermon preachers. Now the Lord said to the sons of Israel, did I not deliver you from the Egyptians? How did he say that? Well, it could have been an angel. It could have been an angel of Jehovah. It could have been a prophet. It's probably a prophet. Did I not deliver you from the Egyptians? That would be the Exodus. That was a great deliverance. The Amorites, that would be Moses beating Sihon of Heshbon and Og of Bashan in the last few chapters of Deuteronomy. God delivered them from the sons of Ammon. That would be when Ammon had joined the Moabites to fight against Israel after Joshua had died during the time of the judges. We read in Judges 3:13, and he, referring to Eglon, the fat king of Moab, gathered to himself the sons of Ammon and Amalek. So we see Moab, Eglon, is allied with the sons of Ammon and Amalek. And we know what happened to the fat king of Moab. He got stabbed by the left-handed Benjamite judge of Israel, Ehud, and died. And then Ehud defeated Moab and thus Ammon also, because Ammon was allied, along with Amalek, allied to Moab. So God, this prophet here, I'm assuming it's a prophet, he says, well, now look here. God's delivered you from the Egyptians, from Sihon and Og, the Amorites. Now he's delivered you from Ammon, when Ammon was allied with Moab fighting you, and the Philistines. Now, when did God deliver Israel from the Philistines? That would be in the times of Shamgar. Judges chapter 3:31. After him, he's the third judge. After him, that was after Ehud. Shamgar rises, Judges 3:31. After him came Shamgar, the son of Anath, who struck down 600 Philistines with an ox goad, and he also saved Israel. Those 600 Philistines might not have been killed at the same time. They could have been killed at different battles. I remember as a young kid fighting skepticism, I read that and said, oh, one person, how's one person going to kill 600 Philistines? Well, it could be done. Sergeant York did a similar feat in World War I. Famous Sergeant York, famous in American history anyway. So it could have happened, but at any rate, what God has done here in verse 11, through this, I think, a prophet, he says, look, I've delivered you over and over and over and over again, and I'll deliver you again. God always points back to history to show what he's done, and that's a good application for us today. If you feel like he's not going to deliver you from your current crisis, just look back and look at all the other times he's delivered you, and it's very comforting, my friend. I'll tell you, you say, well, he got me through those messes, and I didn't think it was possible he'll get me through this mess, too. We go now to Judges 10, verses 12 through 16. Also, when the Sidonians, the Amalekites, and the Maonites oppressed you, you cried out to me, and I delivered you from their hands. Yet you have forsaken me and served other gods. Therefore, I will no longer deliver you. Go and cry out to the gods which you have chosen. Let them deliver you in the time of your distress. I just got to stop and think of an application to modern-day idolaters in America. You go out to your entertainment figures, your sports figures, your money, your girlfriend or your boyfriend that you're fornicating with every night trying to find happiness. Go out and do that when things get bad, when you get stuck, locked down in the COVID crisis or whatever else has gone wrong. The price of food has skyrocketed to where you can hardly eat. Whatever it is, yeah, go look to all the gods of America and see what they're going to do for you. Verse 15, the sons of Israel said to the Lord, we have sinned. Do to us whatever seems good to you. Only please deliver us this day So they put away the foreign gods from among them and served the Lord, and he could bear the misery of Israel no longer. Now here we have God saying in verse 13, I'm not going to deliver you since you served other gods. But then he repents of that because the people put away those gods, and God couldn't bear the misery of Israel any longer. That's pretty anthropomorphic because God, of course, is passionless. He is without suffering. I forgot the theological word which describes that. You think about it. How can God be sad? He's the blessed God. God can't be sad about all this stuff. Jesus could because he took on the form of man, but God the Father cannot. So this is anthropomorphic. Now, the Sidonians were delivered by God. As Ellicott says, nothing very definite is recorded of deliverance from the Sidonians, but as we have seen, the narrative of the book is typical rather than exhaustive. So at some point, the Sidonians had attacked and gotten beaten by God. The Amalekites, we've already mentioned them in Judges 3, they allied themselves with the Moabites and the Ammonites, and Ehud whacked them, so they got beat. Now, this phrase, the Maonites, let's go back to the Sidonians. The Sidonians are mentioned in Judges chapter 3, verse 3. These nations included the five rulers of the Philistines and all of the Canaanites, the Sidonians, and the Hivites who lived in the Lebanese mountains. And these nations are referring to the nations the Lord left in order to test Israel. So these nations are left to test Israel, which means at some point the Sidonians probably tested Israel. We don't know exactly where. Now, the Maonites, that's an obscure term. I'm going to give you several options as to what it refers to. Option number one, it could be the old inhabitants of Maon, which was a city in the mountains of Judah. Now, Ellicott, the commentator, denies that this is the Maon that's referred to. But this city in Judah was next to a wilderness of Maon. It's mentioned in Joshua 15:55, 1 Samuel 23:24. Now, David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon in the Arabah to the south of Jeshimon down there in the south of Israel. Well, that could be, but Ellicott doesn't think so. It could be the Maonites were a people of Arabia. Mentioned in 2 Chronicles 26:7, later in the time of the kings, God helped him against one of the kings, against the Philistines, against the Arabians, and the Maonites. Now, Cambridge commentary, commenting on that, on this, says that the Maonites are probably the Meunim, which are mentioned in 1 Chronicles. They were hostile to Israel, an Arab race inhabiting the Edomite country. Their name survives in Maon, which is 6 hours southeast of Petra. And I've been to Petra. I know where it is. I know what it looks like. And so I like to think that this is probably where the Maonites are from. But again, this is all speculation. And there's no mention of attacks by them at the time of Judges, except right here. Or it could be the Maonites were Midianites because of transcript errors or translation problems. Jameson Fawcett Brown says they're probably Midianites because some Septuagint manuscripts translated into the Greek as Midianites, same people that Gideon fought. Ellicott says it's a textual corruption that should be Moabites. Well, ladies and gentlemen, nobody knows, and I don't know either, but the point that this is a minor detail. The point is all of these pagan tribes in the past have attacked and oppressed the Israelites, and God always delivered them. When, he says, you cried out to me. Well, now you've forsaken me, and now things are going bad here. And the Ammonites are coming across the Jordan River to steal your crops and to steal your animals. Too bad. Unless you put away the gods, in which case I will deliver you. And so, verse 60, they put away the foreign gods from among them. We go now to Judges 10, verses 17 through 18, and we'll finish this chapter. Then the sons of Ammon were summoned, and they camped in Gilead. That, of course, is to the east of the Jordan River. That's where they were located, actually. And the sons of Israel gathered together and camped in Mizpah, since we're east of the Jordan River. This is probably the Mizpah that's near where the Jabbok River runs into the Jordan River from the east, the same place where Jacob came back from Syria, wrestled with Jesus, the angel of Jehovah, at Penuel, roughly near Succoth, near Mahanaim, those places on the map. I say that because there's Mizpahs everywhere. I think I found about five of them on BibleAtlas.org, five or six. There were several cities in Israel to the west named Mizpah, usually around the Benjamin, southern Ephraim around Benjamin. Gill says there were two Mizpahs on the east. The one that I prefer to think it is, because it's the most famous one, is Genesis 31:49, where Jacob wrestled well, he eventually, near where Jacob eventually wrestled with the angel of Jehovah, but he was being chased by Leah and Rachel's father, Laban. Laban catches up. They sort of have a reconciliation, and they have a little covenant agreement, and it says, Mizpah, verse 49, may the Lord watch between you and me when we're absent from one another. I always think that's interesting. People, I remember in the Presbyterian church when I was growing up, let's say the Mizpah benediction. I thought it was something really sacred and holy. Turns out it was just a deal between Jacob and Laban, but whatever. There was another Mizpah at the foot of the Hermon, Mount Hermon, in the very northeast of Israel, in the land. It says in Joshua 11:3, the Hivites are at the foot of Hermon in the land of Mizpah. So the land of Mizpah must be at the foot of Mount Hermon. So we don't really care about that. And by the way, sometimes Mizpah is spelled with an H and sometimes with an E, Mizpah or Mizpeh. All right, with that little bit of minutia behind us, we are now finished with Joshua 10, verses 1 through 18. We are now prepared to go to the interesting story of Jephthah. He takes up several chapters here. He's the guy that offered to sacrifice the first living thing that showed up at his door when he came back from victory. And many people think it was his own daughter, and that is risen. It has given it to the church a great theological problem to discuss on Theology Night at your church. We'll see that in our next audio. I hope you enjoyed this one.